Welcome to the Florida Roundup. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. Thanks for listening this week.
And I'm Melissa Russ in Jacksonville. Well, football season is officially underway, but this year, NFL fans are more conflicted than ever. Some people are boycotting not only the NFL, but also Nike. They're even destroying their Nike apparel after the iconic brand named Colin Kaepernick as the newest face of Nike's Just Do It campaign. Now, the ad aired last night during the NFL season opener between the Eagles and the Falcons. Take a listen.
If people say your dreams are crazy, if they laugh at what you think you can do, good. Stay that way. Because what non-believers fail to understand is that calling a dream crazy is not an insult. It's a compliment.
Now, of course, this ad can be seen and heard as a reference to Kaepernick's lawsuit against the NFL for allegedly colluding to keep the former San Francisco 49ers quarterback out of the league over his protests against police brutality. He was the first NFL player to take a knee during the national anthem at games to protest shootings of unarmed black men by police. Now, why is this a story here in Florida? Well, we're crazy about football in the Sunshine State, right, Melissa? Lots of reaction as this season begins. It's big business in Florida, no doubt about it. Lots of fans up and down the peninsula and the panhandle. Three NFL teams on this state, the Dolphins, the Jaguars, and the Buccaneers, of course. And then there's the college influence here. Nike, after all, has big multi-year, multi-million dollar contracts with both the University of Florida and Florida State University. The reaction to this has been mixed, as you would imagine. For instance, here in South Florida, a police union has been urging its members and local law enforcement to boycott the Dolphins and boycott the NFL after some players took a knee at a preseason game in the warm-up for the season opener this Sunday.
So it got us to wondering, how is all of this playing with the Florida players and the fans out there? Here with their thoughts on this, we welcome Blythe Brumleave. She's a Jacksonville sports radio host and the founder of Brumleave Brands. If nothing else, this Nike move is a marketing move. So, Blythe, it's good to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us. Well, I guess we don't have Blythe. As we work to connect her, though, give us a call here on the Florida Roundup at 305-995-1800 and let us know, what are your thoughts about Nike, Colin Kaepernick, and how is it affecting your loyalty to your NFL team in Florida? Do we have Blythe there? Hey, Blythe, are you with us? All right, I guess I'm having trouble hearing her.
We'll
Tom,
try to so figure out. We'll try to figure out why she can't hear us here. Meantime, John Devine also along with us, the assistant sports editor at the Miami Herald. John, walk us through kind of as this season opens, how all of this is playing with Florida fans.
Well, it's a twofold thing. One, you have the Florida fans. This Nike move and this, it is all about looking toward the future, for better or for worse. A lot of this is divided across different lines, racial, generational, more than anything else. But this is targeted toward the next generation of fans. So if you look at the protests that are going on, I've even seen someone burn their Nikes with their feet in them. It usually skews older. But if you're talking about the 15, 17-year-olds, and you even mentioned University of Florida and Florida State have multi-year deals with these people.
Right.
These people and kids pick schools for the strangest reasons. What the uniforms look like, the updated uniforms, taking a stance along with Colin Kaepernick probably skews better for the younger people than the people who are actually buying it now, who are buying it later. People in their 40s and 50s, they're not, it sounds mean, but they're not as concerned about it as the people who are in their teens and 20s who have more discretionary income to buy these things.
So
that's interesting.
Yeah, it really is. So not much of a threat then to that core audience now for the NFL and for college football?
There is some threat for college. Think about the college students. If you're talking about the boosters who for now, like the Bull Gators, And then the Hurricanes, you think about those boosters. Yes, there is some small time loss, but I'll give you an example. And I was looking it up. Apex Marketing annualizes the value of social media impact on brands. And according to a story, the ad has equated to $163.5 million of value. That's how much value they get from it. Not how much they spent on it, but how much buzz and talk has been centered on it. And you and I both know the people who buy these the most are the people in the younger demographics. Yeah.
Let's see if we can bring Blythe Brumleaf back into the conversation. She's a sports radio host in North Florida, founder of Brumleaf Brands. So, Blythe, can you hear us? All right, we're going to have to keep trying. But, you know, she understands sports and marketing, Tom, and this is something it's fascinating to look at because it's the intersection of sports, politics, and marketing. I mean, John, Nike branding itself once again is sort of on the leading edge of social justice in America. I can't think of a company that's been more aggressive or more innovative over the years that sort of plays in the sports world in navigating how to ingeniously brand their merchandise and spread it across so many areas of American culture. And so, do you agree or disagree with the notion that Nike is winning in the long run when it comes to what they're trying to achieve with this whole embrace of Colin Kaepernick?
I would look at their track record. And when I say that, about 20 years ago, it was Charles Barkley who talked about, I am not a role model. And they had that marketing campaign saying, don't necessarily look to athletes to be your child's role model for this. And now they've taken a 180-degree turn on this. And they're saying, hey, here are some role models. But it's important to understand that it's not just Colin Kaepernick as part of this rollout. It is, they have other athletes as well. It's just, this is the most polarizing one. So you have that. And then you couple that with the fact that you're looking at the way, like I said, they have done lots of research, lots of marketing. If I look at that track record, they haven't really lost that much yet. There will be, you know, and it's whether it's a net gain for the future. 10 years from now, Nike is still or more relevant in part because they took that stand. And remember, they kept Kaepernick on the payroll for a couple years since this protest has started. If they were really against the Kaepernick situation, they probably would have pulled him and cut that endorsement contract by now.
Yeah, 305-995-1800. The NFL season officially underway here in Florida, gets underway this Sunday. Of course, Nike player protests, NFL fans, all being discussed here in football crazy Florida. 305-995-1800. Has any of this discouraged your appetite for the NFL? Or for that matter, what about the relationship between college athletic programs and Nike? Blythe Brumleaf is a Jacksonville sports radio host, founder of Brumleaf Brands. Blythe, can you hear us now?
I can hear you.
There you go. Sorry about the technical difficulties earlier. But how does this play in different areas of Florida? Three NFL teams. It is one of the most popular states for the NFL, certainly. You've got three different areas of this purple political state, Jacksonville, Tampa, and Miami. How does this issue play in different places, and how do the teams respond differently?
I don't think it plays as largely as people would estimate, because what you see with Florida or in this particular state with Jacksonville and Tampa and Miami is that fans are still going to go to games. We saw with Jacksonville last year, the players famously protested and linked arms over in London, and that caused a little bit of an outrage. But as the season went on and as the team was more successful, fans still showed up in droves. You are seeing collectively a drop in viewer attendance, but that's across all sports across the entire board. But the NFL is still significantly better as far as viewership and fan attendance-wise compared to all other sports.
And you know, Blythe, it's interesting to look at how Nike has contracts with schools that are dominant in the SEC, including Florida and Florida State. Even if a college athletic department wanted to cut ties with an apparel company like Nike, they really aren't in a position to do that, right? I mean, there's a small private school in Missouri that announced it would cut ties with Nike over this whole thing. But by and large, the big schools, they're going to keep sporting that swoosh.
Yeah, they're going to keep supporting it because Nike, I believe, has a new 10-year deal with the NFL. And like you said, they have several deals with schools all over the country, specifically in colleges. But the difference between colleges and the NFL is the NFL used to require their players on the field in order to air the national anthem. In college, you don't have that. And the players stay in the locker room. The national anthem is played, and they go through the normal pregame ceremonies before the players ever enter the field. So So I don't think you're going to see this as an issue among colleges as more as big of an issue as it is in the NFL, or a perceived issue.
Well, right. There's no players union in the NCAA, despite efforts that some would like to see a players union in the NC2A for many reasons. But John Devine, what about just these university relations with Nike? You talked about Nike's marketing through the years and how it has embraced this type of controversy. But let's face it, you know, universities are very sensitive to their partnerships in this environment.
They are sensitive. I guess here's an easy way of putting it. When a college football team, let's say, especially in this state, University of Florida, Florida State, Miami, even UCF, USF, FIU, and FAU, they go to bowl games, right?
Mm-hmm.
According to how well or how big the bowl games are, if they go to the Orange Bowl, they get a lot more money. If they go to the Citrus Bowl, that's a little bit less. But what happens is they get millions of dollars from that by itself, right? You want to attract the kids who are going to put you in that situation. The kids who support this and who are coming up, who are 16, 17, 18, they do keep track of who has what. And they also are very savvy about who's wearing what clothes and who's wearing what gear. And if it's Under Armour or if it's Nike. And they do remember that Nike stood with Colin Kaepernick. Mm. So if you're getting National Signing Day for football is in February, if you're getting 20 of the top kids, especially from South Florida, which is a real hotbed, and you say, guess what? We supported Kaepernick. They kind of resonate with each other. So if you get more of those top athletes just for that stance, and you have a waiting list, if University of Miami or Florida State is 10-1 or 11-1, and they're playing around New Year's Day, then that's what the kids gravitate toward. Now, you're going to lose some of those. You may lose a few of the people actually watching, but if you're 10-1 and 11-1, there are other people just as willing to watch them play.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Interesting.
Right? That, Melissa, you're saying essentially the audience is the recruits, the high school players trying to recruit to get on the field for those colleges.
That's right. That's right. And lots of calls on this. It's football season in Florida. Are you a college fan, an NFL fan? What corner of the state are you hailing from? As we talk about Nike, the NFL, college football, and Colin Kaepernick, lots of strong feelings about this, with some football fans even burning and destroying their Nike apparel. Where do you stand? 305-995-1800 here on the Florida Roundup this Friday. Holly is in Boca Raton right now. Hey, Holly. How are you?
Good morning. Very good. How are you?
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a child at FSU and one at University of Florida. I am proud of Nike. I've always taught my children that we have a First Amendment right to free speech in our country. That's the bedrock of our country. I wonder if people would be outraged if they took a knee because we hadn't beaten cancer. Would they be still having this outrage? Is that the real issue here?
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Holly. You know, Blythe, she gets at the heart of this. This gets at the deepest division in this country, really, which is race. This has to do with race in America and the intersection of sports with race, with Nike's decision to make Colin Kaepernick the face of this campaign. You know, and football is as good a prism as any for looking at the divisions in America over this.
And I think a lot of fans, it seems to be like it has to be reminded over and over again that it was a former Army veteran and a Seattle Seahawks player, Nate Boyer, that was the one that told Colin Kaepernick how to protest in a respectful way. And that's where I think a lot of this is lost, is that at first Colin started out just sitting on the bench when it was originally reported a couple years ago. But now it's come to the forefront that he actually approached an Army veteran and asked him the respectful way to protest. And that's what we're seeing. And it's hard to comprehend so many Americans taking offense to that when that opinion was originally sought out.
That's right. A Green Beret, wasn't it, who told Kaepernick, I would find it more respectful if you kneeled than if you sat down.
Hmm. Yes, it was Nate Boyer, actually, who told him that. It was a former NFL player and Army veteran. So it comes from a good place. And I've heard from, we talk about this topic regularly on our radio show, and the common denominator between this is that He is peacefully protesting. The NFL is a private entity, is a private organization, and they can either allow this or disallow it. And you could question a lot of their handling in regards to this protest. But at the end of the day, it is Colin Kaepernick's right, and it is the NFL's right to either allow or disallow this.
And John Devine, the owner's right to discipline or not discipline or come up with their own policy about staying in the tunnel until after the national anthem or those types of policies?
Well, remember, everything is collectively bargained in theory. So that means the NFL as a whole.
In theory.
In theory. Hey, you always have to add the qualifier.
Right.
But what happens is they have to do it as a whole. They make the decisions as a whole. And there is a decision that now you can stay in and then come out if you want. They don't necessarily want to see you on the sidelines protesting. Yeah. But remember, a few years ago, this wasn't even like a topic of conversation.
Right.
Protest or not, whether they had to come out for it. So all of a sudden, this takes on a whole new thing. And remember, even when Kaepernick did it originally, he was over on the sidelines quietly. No one noticed.
Right.
Steve Wyche from NFL Network brought up, just asked him as an aside, and this blew up.
Hmm.
So it wasn't that he was standing there on the 50-yard line for everyone to see and saying, look at me now.
Yeah. Let me bring in another quick call here before we hit a break in Broward County. Allie on line 12. Go ahead, Allie. You're on the radio. Thanks for holding on.
Hey, thank you. Thank you ever so much for having me. I do feel very strongly about this Kaepernick thing. And from the very first time that he did that, I'm not a particularly a football fan, but a lot of my friends are, and I know that the viewership is down since a couple of years ago in football. I mean, they're trying now really hard to kind of bring back the times when the football was really, really popular, because I hear more and more that people are not watching it as much. Even my boyfriend doesn't, and he's a huge football fan.
And did he stop watching because of the player protest?
Because yes. And I think my point of view on that is I mean, you're a player. That's your job. You're going to work, just like I do. You know, I go to work. I'm getting paid, not millions, but I'm getting paid, and I'm not getting paid for expressing my feelings. I mean, you're a star. You can use any social platform.
Yeah, Allie, I think we get it. Thanks for sharing that, John Devine. What about this idea that these men are employees, and this is their job?
Okay, these men are employees, and this is their job. What happens is it's kind of unique. It's also like actors and actresses. There are certain people who have a bigger platform, and I'll give you an example. If you look at the Twitter profiles of these people as well. I don't have 6 million. I don't have 6 million followers.
John, I'm going to pause on you there.
Sure.
We're going to pick it up after our break, talking about NFL player protests and Nike. John Devine, assistant sports editor with the Miami Herald. Blythe Brumleave, a Jacksonville sports radio host. Your phone calls 305-995-1800. The conversation will continue on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. We're statewide this Friday as football season kicks off in Florida. What are your thoughts about the big flap over Nike and Colin Kaepernick? Tom, lots of calls.
Lots of calls. I wanted to get John Devine one more time from the Miami Herald just to finish up your thought, John, about Allie from Broward County talking about these player protests are essentially coming from employees of private companies.
Okay, thank you for letting me come back on that. Like I said, these people have all these followers. They do have a voice, and the voice can't necessarily be convenient for when it fits everyone's social platform. For years, we had Michael Jordan as an NBA player, and everyone's like, oh, this is so great. And then there was a complaint that he did not stand for anything. He was there for 20 years. No one knew what he really stood for. All of a sudden, you have athletes coming out saying what they stood for, and the topic of police brutality or killings of unarmed black men or young black men is at the forefront. So now they have a platform to do that, and now we're telling them just to be quiet. They're just not on the field. You know,
whatever people think of Colin Kaepernick, it's indisputable that he's made an indelible impact on the national conversation about this.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is something, you know, the Black Lives Matter is another tipping point where people go on one side or the other. But at its core, you're still dealing with the fact that young people are being killed. And there are segments of the society that are not happy with this and demand change. And if
Let's
you come from there...
Calls. Yeah, if you come from there, that's exactly. Just want to bring in Stephanie in Boynton Beach. She's been holding. Hi, Stephanie. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm 70 years old. I'm white. And I'm 100% behind Colin Kaepernick and Nike. And I think the issue that people are still trying to raise is that it's about how young black men are treated by the police. And it was a valid concern that I think took a lot of bravery on his part to raise the issue. And I'm glad it's still out there. We're all paying a lot more attention.
Thanks for that. Yeah, Stephanie, that was sort of the point I was getting at a minute ago, John, is that he has moved this issue front and center yet again as another football season kicks off, a guy who isn't even playing anymore. And so it's quite remarkable.
And there's a case pending about collusion, which means the owners all making a concerted effort to keep him out of the league. The question is, there are 32 teams. You usually have two quarterbacks. At its core, is he one of the 64 best quarterbacks in professional football? And if the answer is yes, then he should be playing somewhere. If the answer is no, then he should still be on the sidelines. And that's why this case is so interesting.
Blythe Brumleaf, I'm wondering from your position watching Jacksonville and the Jags, is the Colin Kaepernick story different there? I know you didn't think the fan base necessarily responds differently. What about ownership response to this between the Jags and the Bucks and the Dolphins?
Well, ownership in particular, especially with Shaq Khan, he's the only minority owner in professional football. And so I think from an ownership perspective, you saw him in London last year, linked arms with several Jaguars players in support of this protest and in support of this movement. So I think Jacksonville in particular is in a little different of a situation versus the other NFL teams. But there was some talk, not this past offseason, but the offseason before, about bringing Colin Kaepernick in as far as competing for the starting quarterback position. And that was rumored to be happening, and then for whatever reason, it didn't happen. And I think that plays into his Colin Kaepernick's case against the NFL as far as collusion.
Let's go to Zeal in Palm Beach. He's got some thoughts about this. Hey, Zeal, you're on the air as well. Go ahead. What are your thoughts?
Zeal, are you with us from Palm Beach, from West Palm? Go ahead.
All right. Well, as we try to work him back in, John Devine, you know, it's really extraordinary to me when I talk to people who come from different points of view on this, just the outrage that many white Americans feel over what they see as disrespecting the flag, being unpatriotic. Not all white Americans, of course, but many. And so in that respect, the original intent of the protest, the narrative on it, changed over many months, in no small part due to tweets from President Trump criticizing these players. And so now, with Nike's move, the narrative shifts yet again. And so Nike, I think, has made the bet that in the long run, their association with Colin Kaepernick will be on the right side of history. This is not only a marketing move on their part, but it's a championing of a cause that so many Americans see as extremely important.
And I do think that. It, like I said, it is social consciousness, and it's also putting their money where their mouth is. And so when you do that, and when you see that, especially here, you know, the marketing campaign says that pretty much he's risking everything to push the conversation forward. And I think what happens is, when you look at the political side of it, the message got kind of skewed. And even the NFL players, with their protests, all of a sudden it was about the anthem and the respect for the country. Now, as you mentioned before, Colin Kaepernick, you know, he sought out advice on what to do. And it shifted away to the fact that people in inner cities were being killed. and what the police's role in it. Now, with this, we get to try and shift that back, with the sideline being people burning their shoes. And just a message, if you burn your own shoes, you've already paid for them.
Right, right.
So it's really it's kind of pointless, but yeah. That's just my two cents.
Yeah, cut up your socks.
Right.
Yeah.
I've seen suggestions. Go ahead and donate them if you feel that strongly yes. against Nike to
exactly.
some folks. Blythe, what about owning this message? I mean, Melissa talked about kind of the president certainly inserting himself in social media in this, and coverage of this has mistakenly been characterized as players protesting the national anthem. That is not the case. John Devine, the assistant Miami Herald sports editor, speaking eloquently about what the protests are focused on. But who owns the message if a player takes a knee or stays in the tunnel for the national anthem as this new NFL season gets underway?
Well, I think it, as far as the overall protest, it wasn't getting any kind of attention until the president started tweeting about it. And that's when you saw a reignition of this debate. But in today's day and age, you really have to fight propaganda with attention. And the way you use attention is you use your social media platforms. And Colin Kaepernick has been great about that. He's donated millions of his own dollars to several different charities. And now working with Nike, he's been working with Nike since 2011. And he hasn't played football since 2016. And yet Nike chooses to make him the face of their new, you know, 30th anniversary franchise or marketing campaign. And that, I think, says a lot about using his causes and using his attention to fight this propaganda of what we're hearing around this protest.
Let's go to Grant in Miami. He's got some thoughts about Cap, Nike, NFL stuff. Grant, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you doing? I think that we're just witnessing some sports history going on, and I think it's trivial and petty that we are not allowing these protests to happen. We all remember the Mexico City Olympics, but we forget, you know, the classic passes and touchdowns. And, you know, it's maybe hard to measure, but I think we could make the argument that maybe viewership would go up if we allowed these protesters to, you know, express their thoughts.
Hmm. Thanks, Grant. You know, and John, it's important when we look at history to remember that there was a time when Muhammad Ali was one of the most hated men in the nation. Many young sports fans might not realize that.
Couldn't
today,
box.
But he was hated for his stand against the Vietnam War. And over time, he became lauded. And so is Colin Kaepernick, will he go down in sports history, in your view, as a figure of that magnitude over this issue?
I think it will fall a little bit below, and here's why I say that. Muhammad Ali was transcendent and a champion long before that, and so you can argue that he was the most popular athlete even before that, and then they stripped everything away, his heavyweight title, his ability to make a living. Colin Kaepernick was an average to good quarterback, depending on where you stand on it, and he will be lauded for that, just like the people in the 1968 Olympics, but I think it sounds strange. If this was LeBron James doing this instead of Colin and he was stripped from it, I think then you're kind of on an equal footing, but it doesn't lessen his place in his sports history at all.
Hmm. Another call here from South Florida, Nick in Miami. Go ahead, Nick. You're on the radio. Your thoughts.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. There are people protesting out here, not watching the game or going to the game because Kaepernick is not in the game.
So you think his absence is contributing?
Yes. I'm not watching the game. I got friends that are not watching the game or going to the game because Kaepernick is not there.
So you're protesting the fact that that he has not found a place in professional football.
There you go.
Hmm.
You got it.
What if he suited up for the Dolphins, Nick?
Oh, it'll be watched all day long.
Fair enough. A Finn fan. You. Yeah, gotcha. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Blythe, you know, even if Colin Kaepernick never plays the game again, he's a name that we will remember. And that the collusion case, what are your thoughts on how that will ultimately end up? The lawsuit he's filed against the NFL.
I think he's got a real shot at winning this collusion case. I mean, a couple teams in the offseason did reach out and did try to sign him, but they were only doing it, rumors are, around the report that he would end his protest. And I think with Seattle Seahawks and the Baltimore Ravens both reached out as far as coming in a backup role. But it's also an interesting perspective because as a backup quarterback, traditionally, you are meant to be seen and not heard. It's usually the starting quarterback that's the leader in the locker room that is speaking on behalf of the team. And I think that that's where you have sort of an issue with Kaepernick and his protest as far as the NFL is concerned. And in the other sport, if Kaepernick was speaking out like this, it wouldn't be as much of a problem. In the NFL, however, it's seen as more of a problem, not only because of the demographics of the NFL, but also because of the position that he plays. A lot of the times, and a lot of organizations and a lot of teams do not want a player in a backup position, especially the quarterback position, making as much media noise as Kaepernick has made. We sort of saw the same. A similar situation with Tim Tebow in a backup quarterback position that other teams just didn't want to take that media or perceived media risk.
Yeah. It's fascinating to talk about this here in this state with our three NFL teams and our college teams, even high school football. Mm-hmm. Even high schools are talking about this in terms of their association with Nike. So appreciate your time. John Devine, he's assistant sports editor with the Miami Herald. Blythe Brumleaf, she's a Jacksonville sports radio host. She's also founder of Brumleaf Brands, understanding that interplay so well between sports and marketing. So good to have you both on the show as we talk about this hot topic. And football season is upon us, which means my house is going to be pretty loud for the next several months. So thanks, John, and thanks, Blythe, for being on the air with us this Friday to break it all down for us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having us.
And it's the Florida Roundup you're listening to right now, coming to you from Florida Public Radio.
Well, the state's two major political party candidates for governor here this week, Melissa, named their running mates. Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum, the Democrat in the race, tapped a former rival, Orlando businessman Chris King. And the GOP congressman candidate, Ron DeSantis, chose Miami State Representative Jeanette Nunez, the first Cuban-American woman to be a candidate for the lieutenant governor job here in the Sunshine State.
That's right. Meanwhile, the polls between Gillum and DeSantis, as you might expect in our swing state, they are neck and neck. So, as the general election campaign heats up, what will be the biggest issues in this race? Here with some thoughts on that, we're pleased now to welcome James Cawley's Capitol reporter for the Tallahassee Democrat, and Elizabeth Coe, state government reporter for the Miami Herald. They're both joining us from WFSU in Tallahassee. And give us a call right now on the Florida Roundup. Who will get your vote for governor, Andrew Gillum or Ron DeSantis? 305-995-1800. Elizabeth, let's begin with you. Your thoughts on these two running mates for these candidates, Jeanette Nunez for DeSantis and Chris King for Andrew Gillum. I mean, typically people don't think that the LG makes a difference in this sort of contest. Could this year be different, though? What do you think?
Well, thanks very much for having me. You're right in that the lieutenant governor position has historically been one that typically appeals in terms of what they can bring to balance on the ticket. It's a position that doesn't have a lot of political power in the state. I mean, we saw that so recently with Rick Scott, who had a lieutenant governor, then left that position empty for a year when he demanded the resignation of his then LG. In picking Nunez, who is a pretty well-regarded Tallahassee veteran, I think DeSantis is definitely signaling, one, that he's interested in bringing her perspective as a Cuban-American woman to the ticket. She's also someone who has a lot of credibility within Tallahassee circles. She's been a representative since 2010, and until she was tapped to join the ticket, had been raising money for a state Senate race. So she's someone who has a lot of connections, which is perhaps valuable to DeSantis because he's been a congressman in D.C. With regard to Chris King, there's been a lot of talk about how he and Andrew Gillum had a good rapport while they were both campaigning against each other in the primary, and that's something that was pretty unique considering, one, how crowded that field was, and two, that it got a little contentious at times. And it's funny because when Chris King was announced as his running mate, he said yesterday that this isn't a political marriage or a marriage of convenience, that they're genuinely friends. And so Chris King brings a businessman's perspective, of course.
James
but
Cole,
he seems to also bring that perspective of friendship with the mayor.
Sorry for interrupting there, Elizabeth.
No, of course.
James Call, let me bring you in here. Nunez does have a record, a legislative record in Florida that is going to be examined. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I'm not up...
Or tell us about the position, the leadership position that she's been in Tallahassee, and those connections that, that may or may not assist DeSantis in his effort to gather the non-party affiliated voter, which is the type of voter that's going to decide this gubernatorial election.
Let me put it to you this way. The running mate picks by Chris King and Ron DeSantis is a study in contrast.
By
just as
Andrew Gillum,
are.
I think you meant. By Andrew Gillum and Ron DeSantis.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
You threw me with the question. I was taken a little bit off guard. I wasn't prepared to speak about Jeanette Nunez. But again, DeSantis is tacking to the center, trying to tack to the middle, and we're going to see how that plays out with Jeanette Nunez. She was quite critical of President Donald Trump, and who appears to be Ron DeSantis' mentor. He called her. She called him, a KKK supporter and a con man. Whereas, you have a situation here where you're trying to tack to the center. Meanwhile, Andrew Gillum is throwing conventional wisdom to the wind. he doubled
really
down.
He really is. Yeah,
he doubled down on a very bold strategy that he pursued during the primary. He doubled down on he identified an audience, he collected that audience, and he motivated that audience, and he turned it out. Chris King actually ran to the left of Andrew Gillum. His policies are much more progressive. Chris King has no government record, but he brings to the ticket a commitment to a very progressive agenda, which is quite different than what DeSantis and Nunez is running on.
James, stick with us. Continued conversation. Politics in Florida on the Florida Roundup. More after this. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
I'm Melissa Ross. And as we continue talking about the governor's race with James Call, he's a Capitol reporter for the Tallahassee Democrat, and Elizabeth Coe, she covers state government for the Miami Herald. We want to cover the state with you and your calls. Who will get your vote for governor? Ron DeSantis or Andrew Gillum? Give us a call. 305-995-1800. Lots of calls coming into the show this Friday. Rocio is in Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Rocio. Who's going to get your vote?
Hi, how are you?
Hi. Good.
Andrew Gillum will get my vote.
And why is that?
Because I really believe is a change is what we need here in the state of Florida. He represents what at least he's running for. The campuses that are the subjects that are important to me, which is the environment, healthcare, gun control. So I think that this is what I feel the younger generation is looking for, and I believe that those are the ones that really voted for him the most this time, and I think that they will support him in November.
Okay. Thanks for that, Elizabeth Coe. They did turn out for Gillum. Younger voters, he really expanded the voter universe for the Democrats in this primary. Can he do it again in November? And will the voters break for a sharp change in this state? Or will they go along with the Ron DeSantis campaign, which is going to argue that we need to keep the last 8 years of economic momentum, which is what Congressman DeSantis will say, we need to keep going on that same track?
Elizabeth, what do you think?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, there you go.
Go ahead. All right. Well, I was just saying, that's a million-dollar question, or multi-million-dollar question, if you will, when it comes to this race. What will voters choose? It is true that Mayor Gillum did expand the political universe, right? He crafted a winning strategy off the plank of approaching progressives and young voters, and building a path to victory with African American turnout. It remains to be seen if that'll happen in the general election. There's a couple of things at play. One, this is a midterm, and conservative turnout tends to be a little bit higher. I think, too, we've got a lot of the national scene that is definitely going to play a role. The ability of Trump to turn out voters in this state is something that will definitely be at test. And the political punditry, if you will, of Trump being the motivating factor and of this being a referendum on his presidency, mm-hmm. I think is a point that has some value.
James Call?
It's really amazing. Yeah, James.
No, I agree. And one of the things I'd like to add to the conversation is I think that Gillum's success shows that all of our assumptions about winning elections in Florida may be wrong, or we entered a new era. He, for decades now, for at least two decades, the progressive wing of the Florida Democratic Party has said that their candidates in statewide elections have been Republican light, and if you run two Republicans, a Republican will win the election. This
right,
is
and Gillum's,
a clear
Gillum's
break
going
with that.
For a big break with that. Absolutely. Brian and St. Augustine.
Gwen Graham was the safe candidate.
Gwen Graham was the safe. And she lost. Yeah. Brian and St. Augustine. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm from California. I've been in Florida for about 2 years, and it was very stunning for me to see him pick King, because it's pretty much the equivalent of a right-wing governor candidate in California picking an even more right-wing candidate for the general election. But I do agree with the man who was just speaking about how I think we're seeing throughout the country a lot of traditional norms in the political arena when it comes to campaigning are all changing. They're evolving, whether for the better or not. I just hope he made the right decision, because I really think this race is going to turn out to be, you know, as most are, and that's with independents. And I'm just afraid having such a progressive ticket will alienate Florida independents.
That's a question I think many political observers in this state are looking at. Elizabeth Coe, you know, those the argument goes, who might have supported Gwen Graham, Republicans and independents, will they break for Andrew Gillum, particularly now in the wake of his pick of Chris King? So what are your thoughts about that?
So it's funny, because I remember covering the Orlando rally that Andrew Gillum was at with Bernie Sanders shortly before the primary, and talking to voters on the ground, people were pretty enthusiastic about Andrew Gillum in a way that I think a number of other candidates in the Democratic primary were not able to engender in voters. My colleague Lawrence Maurer, who was at Glenn Graham's concession speech in Orlando on primary night, saw something interesting, too, with supporters at that event, right, where they were in shock when Andrew Gillum pulled ahead in the polls, but also excited. I think the idea that Glenn Graham supporters will break for Andrew Gillum is a pretty sound one, right? These are Democrats who, maybe even if they supported the former congresswoman in the primary, are people who are likely to vote along the party line. It's hard for me in the number of conversations
that I've had with voters. But where do you think the third of the state's voters who aren't affiliated with either major party, right now the polling shows they've sort of broken, they're more favorable toward Gillum. A lot can happen, though, between now and November.
Well, another way to look at it is that if you look at the Gillum agenda platform, you see overwhelming support for components of it among Florida voters, according to the polls. Most Floridians want Medicaid expansion. Most Floridians support a $15 minimum wage. And the argument among Gillum supporters and King supporters have been that we have a government here in Tallahassee that does not respond to the will of the people. And they can point to things like the medical marijuana initiative. It passed 2 years ago, and the state still is having problems implementing it. Support for public schools. The one-party system in Florida at the state house does not seem to be responsive to what pollsters say the majority of Floridians support. And the other thing to think of is the question, would Gwen Graham supporters break for Ron DeSantis when there is such a stark contrast between the Democratic agenda and the Republican agenda?
Let me remind folks that you are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. 305-995-1800 is the conversation. Talking politics here with James Call, Capitol reporter for the Tallahassee Democrat, and Elizabeth Coe, state government reporter for the Miami Herald, both joining from our sister station in Tallahassee, WFSU. We are going back to St. Augustine now with Kay on line four. Go ahead, Kay. You're on the radio. Kay, you still with us? Kay moved on to lunch maybe there in St. Augustine. I could hear her back
maybe
there.
Cocktails. Well, maybe cocktails. Maybe. Who knows?
She described herself to our phone producer as a non-party affiliated voter. This is the golden grail, so to speak, for both the Ron DeSantis campaign and the Gillum campaign. And as I'm looking at our description of our phone callers, several Gillum supporters. We'd love to hear from DeSantis supporters, certainly. 305-995-1800. There's not a special phone number for Florida Republicans here on the Florida Roundup. It's the same phone number for everybody, regardless of your party affiliation. But to give us a call, we'd love to hear from Republicans. If you're leaning that way, we'd love to hear why and continue the conversation here. But, James, I want to pick up on something that you mentioned there in terms of on the Democratic side here, certainly support for Gillum, voicing essentially displeasure with the way that the state has run. That may be true at the top of the ticket, but as you mentioned, the majority of legislators, these are more locally voted for people, are Republicans still. So you've got plenty of districts that may be voting one way for governor, perhaps in this election, but voting another when it comes to their local legislator. And if a Democrat, if Gillum is successful in the governor's race, he is still likely to encounter a Republican majority in at least the Florida House.
Correct.
Which provides significant governance as an issue in this campaign, amongst all the other policy concerns. Does it not?
Yes. It complicates matters for a Democratic administration having a Republican-controlled House, but the Senate has always been more moderate than the Florida House. And the other thing is that maybe Chris King. This may be where Chris King comes into play, because we have a very business-oriented Florida House, and Chris King has a background in business. He's accumulated $17 million through the company that he created, Elevation Financial Group. Maybe he knows how to talk to him. The other thing is, remember, what really drives politics in a lot of ways is, you know, at the personal level among lawmakers is what can they get to accomplish? You have to have compromise. There has been no need for the conservative agenda or the Republican agenda or lawmakers to compromise with their Democratic colleagues.
Well, I guess that's the issue right here, Elizabeth, is when you hear Gillum talking about Medicaid expansion or his desire for it, a $15 minimum wage, raising the corporate tax to pay for higher teacher salaries. Is there any compromise for any of that should he be successful?
I mean, that depends on a lot on how he intends to implement those policies. It's pretty clear that there's a limited number of things were Gillum to win the race, right, that he would be able to do solely off the power of the office. I know a number of Democrats who have talked to who hope he wins have said, well, you know, these are a number of his platforms, but even if he's not able to cooperate with the Republican legislature, he has the power of the veto. He has the bully
pulpit. That's
right.
And he can affect a congressional redistricting, or whoever is governor would as well.
Correct.
So thanks, James Call,
and
we're out of time. James Call, Elizabeth Coe, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
This is the Florida Roundup. Thanks for joining us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. Thanks again for listening.
Have a great weekend.